Good afternoon. Thank you, Meiji, for the kind introduction. It is really a pleasure to be here with all of you this afternoon, and I want to thank Onyemaichi, who has worked tirelessly in putting this session together, and also to thank my colleagues from the federal agencies who are here. We truly work together. We are not just here as new partners, but we have been working together side by side and really working to advance equity and opportunity. So it's a pleasure, and I thank them for making this trip out to the APHA meeting, certainly during an important year in addressing health and all policies and the social determinants of health. One of my roles today is to set the stage for our discussion, taking us back to where we were in terms of minority health and health disparities 30 years ago. For those of you that were at the opening session, you heard Dr. Benjamin reference the 30th anniversary of the report of the Secretary's Task Force on Black and Minority Health, which is commonly known as the Heckler Report, as one of the key milestones in public health history. And so for us to take a journey of the past 30 years and certainly now and the progress and work that remains is an important discussion point. Many of you know the story of the Heckler Report, and some of you were likely involved in this important chapter of our public health history when then Secretary of Health and Human Services Margaret Heckler established the Task Force on Black and Minority Health to conduct a comprehensive study of the health status of racial and ethnic minorities. It was really a bold step at the time, and the task force was chaired by the late Dr. Thomas Malone, who was then Deputy Director of the National Institutes of Health. He was the first African American to hold such a senior position within the NIH, and his leadership was critical in really mobilizing the agencies across Health and Human Services, as well as working with external stakeholders to develop such a comprehensive report. And this report marked the first time that the U.S. government came together to convene a group of health experts to conduct such a comprehensive study of the health status of racial and ethnic minorities, and elevated the issue of minority health onto a national stage, really changing the course and the journey that we were facing. What the task force identified was that there were six conditions that contributed to more than 80% of deaths among racial and ethnic minorities. These six conditions, often known as the Big Six. And the task force put forward a series of recommendations of action that needed to be taken in order to address health disparities. The report further acknowledged that although it was understood that there were issues outside of health and health care, such as poverty and education, that impacted the health and well-being of communities of color, that these determinants of health were beyond where the recommendations that the task force was going to put forward, but that these would be notable and important issues that we would need to address in order to end disparities in this country. And the Heckler Report truly was transformational. It was transformational not just for what it described or recommended, but also because of what it triggered. Over the past 30 years, the Heckler Report has served as a driving force for monumental changes in research and legislation and data and programs and policies. It also was one of the drivers, and as one of its most significant outcomes, led to the establishment of the Federal Office of Minority Health in 1986 with a specific charge of working with agencies and stakeholders on implementing the recommendations of the report. And this year, the Office of Minority Health is in collaboration with our sister agencies, but also with so many partners and partners I see here in the room, really commemorating the importance of this anniversary. And as many of you know, there were initiatives certainly that understood the importance of addressing disparities, such as Healthy People 2010, as our nation's health agenda that for the first time included an overarching goal of eliminating health disparities for the nation. And when we look at specific health indicators, such as deaths due to heart disease, we've seen progress where deaths due to heart disease among African Americans have been cut in half. Childhood vaccination disparities are nearly non-existent. And when we fast forward to the present, we're really in the midst of a remarkable moment of opportunity, and that remarkable moment of opportunity being the Affordable Care Act, one of the most significant laws since the passage of Medicare and Medicaid that will help to reduce health disparities. Since the Affordable Care Act's provisions took effect 5 years ago, we have an estimated 17.6 million Americans who have gained coverage, and this is the largest reduction in the uninsured on record. And many of those gains have been among people of color. And today we are in day two of open enrollment period, the third open enrollment period, and we know we have many of you who are helping us in the efforts to ensure that we can enroll as many people as possible into the health insurance marketplace, and that open enrollment period ending January 31st, with the understanding that there are about 10.5 million eligible uninsured Americans who could be eligible for coverage in the marketplace, and a third of whom are people of color. But it's important to note that the Affordable Care Act is not only about providing access to coverage, that it's helping to really address and advance our work in addressing disparities and advancing equity in many ways, in working to increase providers who practice in underserved communities, in working to advance cultural competency and the provision of culturally and linguistically appropriate services in our delivery system, in enhancing our health disparities research and improving our data collection and reporting, as well as strengthening the leadership and infrastructure to address minority health and health disparities across our department and across the nation. And just as we focus on the health and health care determinants, and really a large focus of what we're going to be discussing today, we're also focused on the other determinants that intersect with health and that contribute to health disparities. As an example, we can look at the influence of one zip code, and we talked about this yesterday, at the influence of one zip code on our health status. Where being right here in this area, we can look, for example, at the life expectancy differences that we see in two communities, in Forest Glen and the Washington Park neighborhoods here in Chicago, where Forest Glen, an affluent community in northwest Chicago, where nearly 80% of the residents are white, and in Washington Park on the south side of the city, where more than 98% of the residents are black. That life expectancy in Forest Glen is about 80 plus years versus in Washington Park, where it's 65 to 69 years, a difference of somewhere between 11 and 15 years. And that's not unique just to Chicago, but we see this in other parts of the country, certainly where we are coming from in the D.C. metro area, where life expectancy of a black male born in Virginia is 84, and in Maryland, and in Virginia and Maryland, but in the District of Columbia, it's 77. As a healthcare provider myself, as a pediatrician in my training, I saw the importance of addressing the social determinants of health, where fortunately, as part of our program, we did home visits to our patients to be able to see the communities in which our patients lived, to see the challenges that their families faced, so that it could inform our care and so that we could ensure that we had a broader understanding of the role that we could play, and that certainly it was not the healthcare sector alone that was going to solve these challenges. And in 1985, when Secretary Heckler delivered her statement on the task force's report, she noted that the magnitude and the array of problems made it clear that closing the gap in health status would not be accomplished by any one discipline, any one medical specialty, or even one government agency. She stated that what we would require are partnerships and collaboration. And more than 25 years later, those words still hold true. And this was one of the cases of why the Office of Minority Health, certainly through the feedback and input from so many partners across the country, launched the National Partnership for Action to End Health Disparities in 2011 as a nationwide, community-driven approach towards combating health disparities that uses a social determinants of health lens. Because of the NPA, we now have a federal interagency health equity team that's comprised of 12 different federal agencies tackling priorities such as how do we advance equity in all policies. Agencies such as transportation and agriculture and veterans affairs sitting together at the table discussing ways in which to advance equity in an unprecedented fashion. Because of the NPA, there are now regional health equity councils across the country, and we have some of our regional health equity council members here in the room who are hosting Affordable Care Act outreach and enrollment events, who are providing opportunities for emerging professionals to gain practical experience in working in health equity, and who are conducting assessments of regional specific disparities issues such as access to healthy foods and cultural competency training. Because of the NPA, we have national partners such as the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials and the National Indian Health Board, who are all looking at how they can advance equity into their programs and policies and the work that they do each and every day. And in 2011, the Department of Health and Human Services also took another bold step, which was the release of an action plan to reduce racial and ethnic health disparities, a department-wide plan that is providing a coordinated framework for us to heighten the impact of our agency's programs and policies towards ending disparities. It engages on individual and systems-level factors and barriers to health and health care. And today I'm excited to announce that we are releasing the first implementation progress report of the Disparities Action Plan, which you'll be able to find on our website, minorityhealth.hhs.gov, being released today, highlighting efforts and initiatives that are underway throughout our department to address health disparities. Things such as launching the first Native Hawaiian and Pacific Islander National Health Interview Survey, the first large-scale study that will address long-standing health information gaps in the Native Hawaiian and Pacific Islander population. The Disparities Action Plan is truly helping us to break down silos, to forge new partnerships, and as some of our agency representatives say, it's helping us to change the way we do business. You know, the story of our nation is ultimately one of triumph over adversity, of progress in spite of obstacles. And we've learned as a country and as a public health community how to press ahead in the face of adversity and challenge to ensure that all Americans have the opportunity for equity and the full potential for their health. Because health is at its core about opportunity. Every challenge presents us with an opportunity to do better and to help us to meet the goals of the health of our nation. And we can certainly see this clearly through the lens of our youth. Because we can ask ourselves, should we accept that our children are being suspended or expelled from preschool, and that our children of color, in particular Black and Latino boys, are being expelled at disproportionately higher rates? That's what brought Health and Human Services and Education together to issue a first ever federal policy statement on expulsion and suspension practices in early learning settings. Should we accept, for example, that homicide is a leading cause of death among youth and young adults of color in the United States? That's what brought the Departments of Justice and Health and Human Services together to launch a minority youth violence prevention program where we're bringing law enforcement and public health together to address youth violence through a public health framework. We can ask ourselves, should we accept that community design in certain communities and unsafe neighborhoods can pose significant barriers to engaging in physical activity, such as walking? And that's what brought together Health and Human Services and the Department of Transportation through efforts such as the recently released Surgeon General's call to action to promote walking in walkable communities. This type of collaboration should be the norm. It is not always easy to get different sectors to work together. You all know that very well. That coalition building is hard work and that it takes time. We don't always see how our work on the surface might be connected, but yet they're all interrelated. And so the stories that you will hear, and we hope the stories and lessons you will share with us, will make it clear that we need to go beyond our comfort zones. And yesterday we even heard that we should make this our new comfort zone. It needs to be part of the fabric of the work that we do each and every day. Deliberate, focused, and intentional. Earlier this year, President Obama said that there are consequences to inaction. There are consequences to indifference. They sap us of our strength as a nation. It means that we're not as good as we can be, and over time it wears us out. Over time it weakens our nation as a whole. But the good news, he said, is that it doesn't have to be this way. We can have the courage to change, and we can make a difference. Everyone in this room is a champion for that change, for that vision, and I thank you for your perseverance, but we're not done yet. And I look forward to continuing with you on this journey to a nation in which everyone has the opportunity to reach their full potential for health, so that the story we tell 30 years from now will talk about this moment in time when we faced a remarkable moment of opportunity and we rose to the occasion and we made a difference. Thank you very much. I'd now like to turn it over to my colleague, John King from the U.S. Department of Health. I was about to say he's from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. This is how much we work together. The U.S. Department of Education, we are just a block away.